Welcome back to Real Science Radio for part two of our series on giants in the Bible. We're continuing right where we left off, looking at the 10-foot giant Goliath and more about the giant clans. Dino Dave Wetzel is back to present the evidence and lead us forward. Let's get started. Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
All right, it's time. We got to talk about the most famous giant of all time, right? Here is a reconstruction of the ancient city of Gath. And of course, you can see the Mediterranean Sea there in the distant horizon. But it would be in these low hills called the Shualah there in what's today Israel. And in the area of Gath, Gaza area today, you would have this city and it's giving refuge to Anakim. And Goliath is a descendant of those Anakim. And we know how tall Goliath is because it specifically gives us his measurements. And he's 10 feet tall. So he's just huge. It's kind of like a Robert Wadlow, but not with giantism. This guy is a stud. He is a champion. He's a fighter. Saul would tell David, this guy's been a fighter since his youth. He's trained warrior. 1 Samuel 17:4, there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. 10 foot tall, monster guy. And it's not just that he's tall, he is strong. He is a stud. It says the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. The spearhead weighed 600 shekels of iron. Now that's about 16 pounds. And you might say, well, big deal. I could pick up 16 pounds. That's like nothing, right? Okay, yeah. But put that out on the end of a long spear and try holding it up. In fact, try fighting with it all day long.
Yeah, that's on the spear's head. That's not just the spear. Then try throwing that thing.
Yeah. And so recently I had to demolish a cast iron bathtub out of a bathroom, and I purchased a 12-pound sledgehammer, which at the civilian hardware store, that's the biggest sledgehammer you can get. And I pounded on that for about 90 seconds, and I had to stop and take a That's a 12-pound sledgehammer.
I mean, that's nowhere near as long as this spear. I mean, people make mock-ups of this spear. But guys, this is where it gets really fun. We have archaeological evidence of this. This was not that long ago, some decades ago, an Israeli farmer's out there. He's working his field. All of a sudden, his plow hits something. Bang! He's like, what on earth is that? Brings up the plow, goes down there, and he begins to unearth these metal spearheads. Now, these are bronze, okay? Goliath was probably iron, but there was some mix. They were using some bronze, using some iron, kind of mixed between bronze and iron age going on there. But this would be the area of Philistia. It's over toward the seacoast. It's an Israeli farmer, and he uncovers this trove of ancient spear points. These are giant spear points. And this is a picture of them from the Israeli Museum. And the journal that actually published this find says these spears were too big to wield. So they must have just been used for decoration. So somebody made this enormous spear just to put on the wall because it's so big that nobody could possibly use it. Now, guys, look at the spear points. The spear points have nicks in them. These are not used for decoration, man. These were used for thumping somebody's head. These are real.
Well, these secular...
These are giant spear points, and they're actually in the Israeli Museum today.
Yeah, these secular archaeologists should read the Bible. Then they'd actually maybe realize they weren't too big to wield for these giants talked about in the Bible.
Right.
They must have just been used for decoration. Oh, my goodness.
No, those two on the right are just flat out huge. And people make replicas. You can you can go out there and people make replicas of Goliath's spear. So here's Dino Dave, right? And it's all I can do just to lift this thing up and hold it for the photo shoot and then drop it again. This guy is expected to wield this through the course of a whole day, maybe. We read about these battles going a whole day and even into the night. And so this guy is not just tall. This guy is enormously strong.
So is that spear to scale there? So for the radio audience, that spear is really, it looks like almost twice the length of your body that you're holding up. Did you actually have the correct weight for the spearhead?
I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not even certain.
Well, you're supposed to say, no, it was heavier.
I worked out all day long and I managed to lift that up. But hey, guys, now you understand. Nobody wanted to fight this guy, right?
Yeah.
He's given his speech day after day after day for a month, and nobody wants to fight him until finally David's like, look, we got God on our side. Come on, give me a break. And so he goes for it. And of course, the story of David triumphing over Goliath has become this inspiration all down through the generations. And by God's grace, giants can be defeated. This guy doesn't intimidate the God who made the cosmos. This guy doesn't intimidate the God who built the earth and laid its foundations, but he sure does intimidate us. You know, he's just, the idea of going in hand-to-hand combat with him is just intimidating because he is so, so big. Okay, that's Goliath. Now, understand, Goliath is not the only Anakim altogether. There were four descendants of the giants at Gath who were killed by David and his men. So again, the Anakim is this race. It's this tribe, a whole bunch of kins, okay? Not some genetic anomaly. We read in 2 Samuel 21:20, this is some years after that, there was another battle at Gath, and there was a giant who loved to fight, and he had six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. So these guys are just nasty, okay? It's not like they fight because, you know, well, David was a fighter, right? But he was also a king and a shepherd, and he was a songwriter. No, these guys love to fight. You look at these guys sideways and they just say, hey, you want a piece of me? You know, and just start throwing stuff. They're just violent guys.
Wow. So, Dave, I don't know if you're going to get to, I wanted to ask you about the book of Enoch, because I have Christian brothers who I think take that book too far. Can you talk about, doesn't the book of Enoch, and I've never read it, I've only read excerpts, but it talks about giants that are like 100 feet tall. As far as I know, that's probably physically impossible.
Yeah, that is. I mean, there's no way you're going to have a heart that's going to beat blood up that high. And, you know, you're going to have issues with gravity. Look, these guys would be slow, really slow. Remember, everything scales up. Okay, yeah, you're 12 feet tall if you're Og, and everything is bigger. You're much wider. These guys would be weighing, you know, over half a ton. These guys are just enormous. They'd eat a lot and they'd just be just slow. They're not going to be the first guy down the court, but if they get under the hoop, watch out. Don't try to block them and get in their way, right? They're just massive human tanks. But the Book of Enoch, yes, it certainly exaggerates them. They're called the Watchers, and I have read the Book of Enoch. There's also a lot of astronomical features there that are clearly fabulous. They're mythical. They're the science of the ancient world. But even though it's not a biblical book, it's not inspired, and you have to be careful with it, we know some of it's true. How do we know some of it's true? Because it's quoted in the book of Jude, literally word for word, straight out of the book of Enoch. And so the saying that is in the book of Enoch is actually ascribed in the book of Jude to Enoch. So this is legitimate quotes that are preserved in the book of Enoch, and the Bible affirms that they are this godly man, Enoch. So some, at least, of the book of Enoch is the words of Enoch, who was this great prophet, this great man of God who walked with God, and is held up in the Hebrews as this great, you know, man of faith. But then also we have a lot of fabulous stuff. Somebody, some scribes or some other people added some things in there. So it's apocryphal. We got to take it with a grain of salt. And people gone crazy with it and think, okay, this is, you know, absolute, all kinds of ancient wisdom that we can glean that, you know, be careful with it.
Yes. And so I would also be very careful about saying that the Bible quotes the book of Enoch. I would be very careful about saying that because as I read the passage in Jude, and Enoch also, the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these things, saying, "Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment upon all and to convince all that are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds, which they have ungodly committed, and all their hard speeches, which ungodly sinners have spoken against them." So whoever wrote the book of Enoch could have looked at the book of Jude, since there's a pretty good chance that the book of Enoch was written sometime later. Anyway, I would just be careful about that. Anyway, bottom line, it's apocryphal. We all agree on that.
So Jude would have been written after Christ. We do have Enoch amongst the Dead Sea Scrolls. So the book of Enoch is earlier. It is ancient literature, as is much of the Apocrypha.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so legitimately, Jude is under inspiration of the Bible, taking this quotation from the book of Enoch. I mean, unless God just reveals it to him, but he would have been familiar. We would think he would have been familiar with the book of Enoch. But so I guess I'm comfortable saying that this is a quotation from the book of Enoch, but that doesn't necessarily mean that any of the rest of the book of Enoch is valid. It's just that that is because God put his stamp of approval on it. But there could be historical facts there in the book of Enoch that were legitimate, but then it could also be exaggerated. So the giants, the watchers are real. We know this is the Nephilim. This is Genesis 6. But the size that's given could be certainly exaggerated. And so we just got to be careful. Anything outside the Bible, yes, it's interesting. It's historical. It's just like as if you were to read the Epic of Gilgamesh or some of these ancient, you know, Babylonian accounts or Greek accounts of their gods that went off, you know, and to these great battles and did this stuff and Odysseus and all this stuff. Just be careful. It's apocryphal.
Well, and this is why I wanted to have you on the show, Dave. Number one, I always want to learn from people who've studied things a lot more than I have. And so I've learned something here that I didn't know, which is awesome. But also, having had the opportunity to look at some of your presentations, you really do walk the line with the Bible. And especially when it comes to topics like this, we really appreciate that because, as you've noticed, everybody has an interest in topics like this, but we don't want to go too far and want to be careful, and we want to hear the rest because this is so fascinating.
Well, that's a nice segue into this third piece. And the question that you might have is, okay, so we have the biblical account. Obviously, there were giants. The Bible says that we can believe that. We actually have some archaeological evidence of some of these post-flood giant races. But do we have bones? Do we actually have giant bones? And the surprising answer is yes. And I want to talk about the American Mound Builders. So the American Mound Builders is a civilization that's called the Mississippian Civilization. Now, here's the crazy part. Most people I talk to in the United States of America have never even heard of the Mound Builders. But this was a culture that predated the arrival of the European settlers. It flourished from about 300 BC to about 1600 AD. And most secular scholars will say, well, it's one and the same as the Native Americans, the tribal Native Americans. Maybe. Could be we have some different groups that are coexisting here. But we do know that the tribal Americans, at least at the time of the European settlers, didn't build these large cities, and they didn't have extensive mining operations. The Mound Builders did. They had large earthen mounds they built, and these enormous cities that are with stockades around them, and they did extensive mining of copper for jewelry and for armor. So could it be that these are some different group, maybe even that intermingled, intermarried, perhaps ruled over some Native American peoples? Don't know for sure, but there's some fascinating stories even by the Native Americans that we'll talk about as we go along. So here's a picture of the extent of this Mississippian culture. It seems like it started in the Gulf region and worked its way up along the major rivers. The rivers are kind of mecca for the Mississippian mound builders. Now, understand, these are all abandoned by the time the Western settlers come in. DeSoto comes through, and you have others that are conquistadors, and they have records of some of this stuff. These guys, they've abandoned this. These cities are abandoned. We really don't know a lot about how they lived, but we find their remains in these large earthen mounds. And there are thousands of these mounds, literally thousands of them, mostly through the Mid-South, through the Gulf region, and up into the Midwest, Appalachia, and up and through over to the Great Plains. That's really, and especially along the rivers, we're talking the Mississippi, Missouri, other rivers. So in the 1800s, settlers are moving west, and they run into these mounds, and well, they're curious. They start digging in them. They start excavating, and they find skeletons that are 8 to 10 feet tall buried in these mounds. And okay, they're documented in, for example, in this book, The Ancient Giants Who Ruled America, The Missing Skeletons and the Great Smithsonian Cover-Up. As people find these, they make the newspapers at the time. And of course, you got to be a little careful with newspapers, especially in the 1800s. You know, the 19th century was given to sensationalism, and you want to sell copies, and you want to have like the most significant thing ever found in your backyard, in your town. And so, okay, yeah, we got to treat some of this stuff with a little bit of a grain of salt, but this was commonly known. They're not just one or two. There's hundreds of newspaper reports to people digging up these mounds, finding metallic objects, especially armor, and finding giants. Now, the Smithsonian would get involved many, many times, more often than not, and the bones would get taken to the Smithsonian. What happened to them? They disappeared. Now, guys, I'm not one that's normally given to conspiracy theories. I'm very dubious that conspiracies can be held together without somebody ratting it out. But this is one that, yeah, something weird happened because the Smithsonian showed up at all these digs, and all of a sudden it's like they're gone. The skeletons are gone.
There's probably some room in the Smithsonian that you have to have special key access to, and it's called the Giants and the Palooza Footprints. And
well, so understand, okay, we're talking the late 1800s, early 1900s. This is the time when, of course, you know, Darwin's theory is gaining popularity, right? 1870s, 1880s is not just Darwin, but there's lots of theories of evolution that are kind of going on. Darwin publishes in 1859, but evolution's all the rage, right? And so we want to think in terms that, oh, we're the pinnacle of civilization. This is the Victorian era. We are the pinnacle. A lot of racism going on. And some of these Africans and some of these Asians, even, you know, Australian indigenous groups, these guys are less evolved. We're the pinnacle of civilization. And then all of a sudden you start digging in some of these mounds and you find people that are 8 to 10 feet tall. This is problematic. This runs against the intelligentsia, the academia of the time, which is, hey, we're the pinnacle of civilization. And so, well, what are we going to do with these guys? This is embarrassment. It sounds way too biblical.
Oh, so, and Dave, now just stop right there, by the way. So this is a time in America when people actually took the Bible seriously. Most people don't really understand that today. But there was a time in America when most people believed the Bible, they believed the creation story, they took it all very seriously. So to the Smithsonian, just real quick, we have a certain connection to the Smithsonian here at Real Science Radio because our founder, Bob Enyar, took our church and my little kids on a tour of the Denver Museum of Natural History back 10, 15 years ago. Where there was an active conspiracy going on, by the way, to teach children that they evolved from monkeys. The whole museum is organized around a conspiracy. One of the biggest conspiracies in history is to teach children that they evolved from nothing. And the head of the museum was a guy that we call Captain Kirk, which is Dr. Kirk Johnson was the head of the museum there in Denver. He has now failed upward. He's the assistant secretary of, I forget exactly what it is, but he's in Washington, D.C. at the actual Smithsonian. Just in case anyone wondered if the Smithsonian has ever been involved in any conspiracy, we just want to make clear that, yes, they have been. So there.
Well, guys, the Smithsonian admits, okay, this is what they admit, that they hold the remains of more than 30,000 individuals. This collection includes a variety of remains, such as whole or partial skeletons. American Museum of Natural History, which is in New York City, holds skeletal remains of another 12,000 people. These collections include remains from a variety of sources, with a significant portion of being of Native American descent.
Wow.
That's a lot of skeletons.
That they're admitting
30.
This.
I mean, that's a good-sized city. And who has access to it? Who knows what there is there? Now, some of this stuff has been given back to Native Americans. It's been repatriated. They've reburied a lot of this stuff. Even artifacts have been lost to our museum collections because we want to respect the natives' beliefs that those need to be in association with the owners in their afterlife. And so, you know, a lot of this stuff we're repatriating. But the point is that they admit they've got 30,000 and a lot of it is Native American. So are there giants? I can tell you this. It was so common that everybody talked about it. And Abraham Lincoln in 1848 gave a speech at Niagara Falls, and he talked about the giants. This is a quote from Abraham Lincoln's speech. He says, "Niagara Falls, by what mysterious power is it that millions and millions are drawn from all parts of the world to gaze upon Niagara Falls? The eyes of that species of extinct giants, whose bones fill the mounds of America, have gazed on Niagara as ours do now."
Whoa.
Wow.
Dave, how have I never heard this? I consider myself a history buff.
Guys, I had never heard of this until I started reading and studying this thing out. And all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute. In the 1800s, everybody knows about this. It's not a big deal. It's just giants that have been found in these mounds. It's like everyday conversation. Yes, we have found giants. What's the big deal about it? We all know about this. And now they disappeared. And it's been, you know, swept under the carpet. And nobody knows about this. Nobody has even heard of the Mound Builder civilization, even though they have structures the size of the pyramids of Giza. And they're right here in this country.
Fascinating. Wow. Yeah, I'd never heard of this before in all the years of doing Real Science Radio.
So let's talk about some pretty trustworthy. Again, I'm a scientist. I got a master's in biology, and I want to be careful about just quoting newspapers. But after digging through a lot of the records, I've got some things that, well, here's the 12th annual report of the Bureau of Ethnology of the Secretary of the Smithsonian, okay? This is pretty reliable, especially because, if anything, the Smithsonian is looking to cover this stuff up. But here it is in their annual report, okay, that's going back to the 1800s, and it says, "While at work on a huge mound near Chillicothe, Ohio, archaeologists found the massive skeleton of a man. His mouth was stuffed with pearls. His whole body was encased in copper armor."
Wow.
Now, the pioneers, the cowboys, are fighting the Indians. They don't have copper armor. So what's going on? We got something a little bit interesting going on, and they may not have been smelting ores. Maybe they were just pounding cold copper, but they had a metallurgy that was going on. It seemed like they were mining this up in the Great Lakes region. And so this is a pretty reliable report here of one of these. Now, here's the Arkansas archaeologist, okay? And again, this is a fairly trustworthy. In fact, this is a modern journal. "The skeletons are very large, 7 to 10 feet tall. One femur bone was unearthed that measured 29 inches in length. The skulls are extremely large. The jaw of one is such size it would slip over my own and have considerable space to spare." Now, not everybody's giants, okay? They're digging in the mounds. They find this big dude in the center. Maybe around him they would find a number of his attendants that were executed and buried with him to take care of him in the afterlife, but they're normal size. But it would seem that there were these giants, at least some of them, some of these ancient peoples. And we don't have historical records. They were gone. They were gone by the time of the settlers. But the biggest community of the Mississippian people is Cahokia, which, as I mentioned, is near the present-day city of St. Louis. There's numerous mounds there. They're preserved. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The largest of the mounds is Monk's Mound. This is the size of a football field. It goes 100 feet up into the air, and you've got, you know, all these tons of earth that's moved one basketful at a time to make the mound. Here's some mounds at Cahokia. If you ever have the chance, it's well worth seeing. It's a fascinating sight to go and see there at Cahokia. And you can see where they dug it up. And here is a aerial. I'll show you the aerial in a minute. This is me, actually. I saw that Monk's Mound there. But you can see there's a lower level and then upper level. Here's your aerial. So you can see. And you can go up there. You can hike up there.
Wow.
So, and of course, it's where the Mississippi and the Missouri come together, which is why it's kind of mecca for this Mississippian culture.
Well, what are these mounds? Are these burial grounds? Or what do they know about them?
You can't dig in these today. You can't dig in any mounds. In fact, you can own the land and there can be a mound out back and you cannot dig in it because, well, we just want to respect these burial sites.
So
but there's three types of mounds. To answer your question, there seem to be mounds where people, either they had priests that lived up there or the local ruler lived up there, but up at the top would be kind of like the big dude. And then there'd be smaller mounds around it where maybe some of the noblemen and some of the smaller, lesser rulers would be on a mound. So there are people living on these mounds. And sometimes there'd be multiple generations. So the mound gets built to a level and somebody gets buried in there. And the next guy, his son, build the mound even higher. He lives up there. And then maybe he gets buried and his grandson. So over generations that maybe these got taller, it seems there's multiple layers to a lot of these mounds. And yes, there are people buried at different layers in the mound. There's a second type of mound, which seems to have, you know, some astronomical significance, where they would come occasionally, maybe at equinox or solstice or something, and they would, you know, perform some rituals there, kind of like a Stonehenge almost. And then there's a third kind of a mound, which is artistic in nature. So, for example, you've got some very famous, the Serpent Mound. I think it's I haven't been to that one. I think it's Ohio or New York, somewhere there. But it's this long, skinny, and you can't even appreciate it on the ground. You got to get up in a drone to really see it's that big, the effigy mounds, and they'll, you know, take on a certain shape or something like this. So there's different types of mounds that they have, and some of them have artifacts that have been taken out of these mounds. But this is the biggest. This is Cahokia.
Okay. Well, let's try to fit this into the biblical, you know, reference that we've talked before about. It makes really good sense. It's very plausible that the giants in Canaan were, you know, there to as part of Satan's plan. So, Dave, how does this fit, these American mound builders? How does this fit into that narrative, Zarek? Connection? Do you have opinions? Are there theories on this? How does this all tie in?
It's going to be conjecture. In fact, it's going to be really far out conjecture. I'm not convinced that these are not Native Americans. If you talk to the people at the museums at these different sites, they will tell you they are Native Americans, 100%. In fact, they've even tested some of these skeletons and they have got similarities in genetic DNA fingerprinting to the Native Americans. Well, okay, they're testing skeletons that aren't necessarily giant skeletons. And yes, so there probably was even some intermarriage. I'm not surprised by that. There's also some tie-in to more of a Caucasian as well. So it's not a slam dunk either way. But if you want my theory, I think Joshua, Caleb are beating up on the Anakims, and I think some of them get in boats and get out of Dodge. Now, you can read about, if you were to get in a reed boat, reed, R-E-E-D, a reed boat, Kon-Tiki is an example. This guy built this raft in Egypt, and he just got into this boat, and he just let the currents take him, and guess where you're going to end up? You're going to end up in the Gulf.
All right.
So maybe some of them came here. Maybe some of them floated here. Why is it that we have pyramids in Egypt and we have pyramids in Central America, South America, Mexico, and mound builder sites here?
I was going to say, when I look at the picture, it looks a lot like the South American Aztec type pyramids, which look similar to what is in Egypt. I mean, they all look like they could be related.
A ziggurat kind of a thing.
Yeah, ziggurats, right. That's exactly the word I was looking for.
So, but guys, it's really speculation. The answer is we don't 100% know who these giants were, but we know that they had very advanced civilizations, much more so than kind of the tribal Native Americans that we have recorded, their life recorded by the early pioneers. These guys, like I said, had these stockade fences. They had structures here. They were well-established cities. There had been tens of thousands of people living around Cahokia. This would have been a massive community that would have been organized around those central mounds, but lots of people living in huts outside of it. And this is the biggest, but there's just lots of these sites. And so I go to Cahokia and I go to the museum. There's a museum there. And I say, you guys know anything about giants that were found in the mounds? And they say, no, we don't know what you're talking about. Okay. So I start walking through the museum and they have on display right there at the museum at Cahokia, axe heads. That's going to tie into what you were talking about a little bit ago. I think it was Doug, right? About an axe head. You've got this demolition mall. There is an axe head that's 30 pounds right there in the museum.
Three times heavier, Doug. How did you have done with that one?
How many seconds are you going to be wielding that bad boy?
No, no. Wow.
That's an axe head. It would take a giant to wield that thing. So I'm just saying, I mean, this is kind of like those big spear points. This is evidence of giantism. Typical modern axe going to weigh 3 to 5 pounds, and you're going to get, you know, a demolition maul like you had there. Okay, now you're going to get maybe 20-some pounds. But these are 30 pounds, and somebody's wielding those things. This is pretty crazy. So here's a skeleton. This is an actual legit picture of a skeleton. This is dug up in Catalina Island, and this is being dug up. And this guy, we know, excuse me, his dimensions, and scaling up that skeleton, this would be at least 9 feet tall.
Yeah, and we don't think this is a giantism or anything like that. This isn't the disease that you referred to.
No, this would seem to be, you know, how big this guy is. So again, a lot of these guys have been repatriated, been reburied. Some of them might be in the Smithsonian, but they're certainly not identifying them and letting it be publicly known. So just to kind of complete the circle, there's lots of legends. And I'm talking about one or two tribes. We're talking about dozens of Native American tribes that have these legends of giants, some cases bearded giants. So rather different than the Indians themselves. They identify them differently. The Choctaw Indians talk about the Nahulus, a race of giants that live near the shores of the Mississippi River. Choctaw ancestors fought with them after migrating from the West. And of course, we do believe the Native Americans came through the Bering Straits. They came from the West, unlike the Mississippian, which seems to have come up through the Gulf. And so the Navajo Indians tell about the Starnaki people and talk about as a regal race of white giants endowed with mining technology who dominated the West and enslaved lesser tribes and had strongholds through the Americas. So the Indians, the Native Americans themselves are saying there was this different tribe. There were these giants. And by and large, we fought against them. Perhaps the most credible story of the Paiutes, and they have these stories of the cannibalistic red-haired giants called the Saitika. And the Paiute tribes became vexed with these giants capturing their villages. Well, listen, there's cannibals, they're eating them. I guess I'd be vexed too if they were eating my relatives. And so they put together this coalition of different Native American tribes, and they start a war against the Saitika. And as the legend goes, the Indians start to beat up on these guys, you know, just by force of numbers, they surround them and they kill them. And after a long struggle, they trap the remaining Saitika in a cave, and it's Lovelock Cave. Here's just a little animation of it, but there's red-haired giants, fair-skinned giants, and they're down in there. The Indians say, okay, we got you trapped in the cave. come out and surrender. And the giants say, nothing doing. We're not coming out. So the Paiutes pile a bunch of brush in the cave mouth, according to their own legends, and they set it aflame, annihilating the remainder of these giants. And of course, we have this cave. We can go down there. We can look at this cave, and a lot of Native American, assorted Native American skeletons and artifacts have been recovered from the cave, but no giants have been found in Lovelock Cave there in Nevada. But I'm telling you, these reports, these legends are very detailed, and it's multiple tribes that have these reports of giants. Now, okay. I can talk about a lot of different sites, but let me just mention Moundville, which is, by the way, a great name for a mound builder site, isn't it? Moundville, Alabama. Again, along a river, this is an enormous site, large city, not as big as Cahokia, but very big, rivaling Aztec sites in Mexico. You got 29 massive flat-top earthen mounds. They're very carefully arranged around a central plaza, and it seems like they served for ceremonial structures. Here's a picture, and you can see I'm standing on one of the mounds. You can go on these mounds, and then you can see there across this particular site, Moundville in Alabama, multiple other mounds. And so this is, again, along the river. This is what we think it would have looked like, something like that back in the day. Thousands of the tribal peoples living around this thing. And then, of course, the major plaza there, probably a religious center in the middle of it. And so here is from the Mid-Continental Journal of Archaeology, not a newspaper, but a journal, fairly reliable source, and they say archaeological digs at Moundville occurred in the 1870s. The Alabama Historical Society reported in 1876, Hezekiah Powell discovered the skeleton of a man that measured 9 feet from head to heel as he lay in the ground. A giant,
okay,
anybody's estimation, found there at Moundville.
So none of these places allow archaeological digs anymore? It'd be super interesting if we...
I've been to Moundville, and they have a museum there, and a number of the artifacts, even when I was there, have been taken out of the museum and repatriated. The Indians are trying to figure out what makes sense for them. There's even some disagreement amongst them. If we take all these artifacts, okay, out of the museum, well, no one's going to come to the museum, and our history of our civilizations can just be lost. Egypt displays their artifacts, and we have, you know, various trinkets and things from the early days of the American Revolution. And this is what keeps our history and our culture alive. So there's some disagreement amongst them. And there's different things. For example, these ceramic pots were found at Moundville. And the reason I find the pots particularly interesting is etched on these ceramic pots are flying serpents. Now, I'm Dino Dave, right? And I'm into dinosaurs. I'm into flying reptiles called pterosaurs, pterodactyls. Yeah. I'm familiar with reports of the Thunderbird. The Native Americans encountered these flying reptiles. And I come to Moundville, I'm doing my giant research, and I'm looking at these ceramics, and it's like, wow! On the ceramic is etched what looks like a snake with these kind of ribbed wings. It's a flying snake. It has this widening at the end, which is kind of like a tail vein of a pterosaur. It's got teeth in the beak. Golly, this looks just like the Thunderbird, like a fiery flying serpent. And so here's the actual ceramic. Look at that, guys. It's even got a head crest on that one.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay. So this all ties in. Ties in biblically, ties in with creationism. It all kind of fits real well. Let me conclude. Let me wrap up. Paleontology reveals a fossilized world of giant creatures that roam the earth. Clear evidence for the creation model. Things have not slowly been getting bigger and better over time. No. The opposite's the case. Things in the past were bigger, healthier, and lived longer. Number two, archaeology shows that at multiple points in history, there were giant races of people who were much bigger than the average. Again, absolutely tying in to the biblical model. Number three, these giants became rulers, captains, men of renown, just like the Bible says. These guys that were on the mounds, I mean, these guys were the big dude, right? They're the ones that are buried in the center with a bunch of their attendants buried around them. And they obviously were ruling there in the days of the mound builders. Well, let me just close with a little thought. 1 Samuel 16:7. Why did God allow there to be giants? Why would God allow people to be so big and so intimidating? And I like what 1 Samuel 16:7 says. But the Lord said to Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature. For the Lord sees not as man sees. For man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. See, Doug and Fred, the temptation, those of you that are listening in on Real Science Radio, the temptation for us is to look at things at a horizontal level, right? I mean, just like those children of Israel that come up to the edge of the promised land, they're all get up and go, let's get in there. This is going to be the promised land God's given us. And then all of a sudden, bam, giants. Why did God allow there to be giants? God could have allowed there to be a pygmy race there. They could have gone into the land. They could have come back and they could have said, oh my goodness, this is going to be a walk in a park. We're going to drop kick these guys. These guys are a bunch of puny guys. They're wimps, man. We totally got this. It's going to be easy. Why did God allow there to be giants? I believe it's because God uses giants to test our faith in how we're going to look at things. You know, why does God allow giants in our life, right? Why does God allow a giant of a financial challenge? Why does God allow a giant of a medical issue? Why does God allow a giant of a relationship challenge? Why did God allow these things in our life? Sometimes, I don't have all the answers. I don't know 100%. But sometimes I think it's just to test us and to make us lift our eyes heavenward. Are we going to be like the children of Israel that turn tail and run and refuse to follow God? Or are we going to be like David that says, whoa, wait a minute, we got a big God. Like, let's get our eyes off this giant. Let's get our eyes off, and I'm talking figuratively, right? I'm talking metaphorically. Let's get our eyes off this giant. Let's get our eyes on God. God's got this. Yeah. He can alleviate the situation if he wants, or he can give grace to get through this. And what's God looking for? God's looking for someone that's not fixated on a horizontal level. Look not on his countenance or the height of his stature. God wants somebody that's all about the heart, that's going to have a heart for God. And that's who David was. And that's why God could use him to kill a giant. And so there's a principle here, and hopefully you're encouraged that there's more than just something that's kind of fascinating, tickle our intellect. No, no, God allowed these very real, it's an important part of biblical history. And there's a purpose for this, and it's for God's greatness to be seen and God's glory to get seen. So amen. I got lots more on JimArk.com, and I have a newsletter if folks want to get on board with it and start getting our monthly newsletter. But I got to wrap up, turn things back over to you guys. Thanks so much for the chance to talk about giants, talk about the greatness of our God, talk about how all the biblical and historical and scientific things fit together hand in glove, real observable science verifies the biblical account, and God's word is more up to date than tomorrow's Google headlines.
Well, Dr. Dino Dave, David Wetzel, it was such a pleasure having you on the show. Incredibly informative. You know, like Doug and I say all the time, we're learning stuff all the time at Real Science Radio. We've been doing this for a long time. And man, I'd heard of maybe some giants in America, but not to the level that the evidence that you have presenting on them, and just everything with how it ties with the Bible, ties with creation. You found a dinosaur on one of the, you know, giants' pottery. There's so many tie-ins. Yeah. The secular world doesn't want people to know about this because it goes against their paradigm. So tell you, it was a pleasure having you on, Dino Dave, and sharing your research with us today. And again, I'd encourage the audience to go to genesispark.com and sign up for their newsletter. There's more stuff you can research there. A great site and just a great research. And, you know, God bless you, Dave, for doing all this. And we'll have to have you on again. I know, I think you've got stuff. I bet you have stuff on dinosaurs.
Yes. Oh,
I have a prediction. So, yeah.
You have a prediction, Fred?
Yeah, we do predictions on Real Science Radio. I have a prediction that Dino Dave has a presentation on dinosaurs. I'm going out on a limb here.
No, I can't wait. I can't wait. Dave, you've actually helped me understand more why people don't take the Bible seriously in America like they did 100, 150 years ago, and that there has been. And Fred and I have talked to others who've documented the active conspiracy to delegitimize the biblical record that's happened in the intelligentsia and in the educational community in America over the past 150 years. And you've just exposed us to more of that, that shows us the truth. And I love the fact that you keep it all in biblical perspective, and you talked about, why are there giants? God can give us grace to get through the giants in our lives. That's what we all really need to hear, because that's what this is all really about, is to point people toward God, toward their Savior. Mm-hmm. And man, I want to have you back to talk more about dinosaurs, just to help me understand all that other stuff even better, Dave. Thank you.
Well, I'll look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Alrighty. Thank you. For Dino Dave and my co-host, Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of the Fredican Clan. May God bless you. Intelligent design and